She was the mother, and I was the father. She had her job to do, and I had mine. They always say equal partners, but to me I don't feel equal. Gotta provide for and protect and try to lead them right. So I went to my daddy and I asked for some direction. He said, son, I don't have a clue, and you're my living proof. And I left, but he stayed silent, and his face lost all expression. He said, son, there's a lot to know, and there's a lot to do. You got to know when to hold them, know when to scold them, know when to work away, when to have fun. You always make conversation. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for nothing when the evening's done. Hello and welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton. This that I just played for you is a song called The Father. I wrote the words, but it's based off the song The Gambler, obviously. And I've got a more real recording of it that might sound better than that. But yeah, welcome here. It's exciting. We are going to continue to attack anxiety and depression and try to wrestle them to the ground, as we've said before. And we're making a lot of progress. It's kind of exciting and kind of fun. This is definitely a labor of love for me. So thank you for joining me in this process. And I thank the people who have written in or whatever and said nice things, and people who are enjoying it. Glad you do. I like it being a little conversational and not totally polished. I do more editing than you'd ever imagine. I take out ums and pauses and things. You're probably like, what? You take out pauses? Yes, I do. But even with all that I do, I kind of like leaving it in this way that it's clear that we're just trying to figure this out. But we're moving in a positive direction. I think we're in a area of the woods that is relatively untrodden. We've talked about the work of Terry Warner. He's done some great work in the area of self-deception, and we've talked about Alice Miller. We even talked about Wendy Traynor, who I really don't know as much about. Terry Warner, I took classes from and know really well. And one day I would like to have him on the podcast if he would be willing to do that. I think that would be really neat. I'm not sure what to ask him yet. It'd be nice to just have a long conversation and try to get through some stuff. I wonder if he'd be willing to come on. We'll see. I think I'm ready. Okay, so let's go to my notes. The big thing we're talking about in this podcast is self-deception and how that relates to anxiety and depression. What is that and how does it relate? Self-deception is what happens when you go against the light that is constantly kind of around us and bombarding us, if you will. It's called the light of Christ. At least part of that light is. I don't know for sure if it's everything or not, but for sure when we go against the light, the theory is that we self-deceive and we're not able to go against the truth that we know, basically, this light, without telling ourselves something different. That's not true, because the light is truth. And so, as a result of that, we, in almost an attempt to justify our going against that light, we paint the world in a way that justifies us, okay? So that leads us to see things in a wrong way, and we can get in these patterns of doing things in the wrong way, I assume just by pure pattern of habit, whatever that principle is. So, yeah. That is the great insight, and Terry Warner did a lot of work on that as it relates to our relationships with others, especially, I would say. But he started to indicate that it goes beyond that, but I'm not aware that he really explored the area of mental health as far as self-deception being a part of that. I just never saw anywhere that he really mentions that. Nor do I remember that ever being a thing. The one time I asked about it, I was in his office at BYU, And my recollection was that he said something like, well, I would never condemn someone who has depression. And that's correct, I believe, for him to say that. I don't think you should. I also think you need to be careful of, well, condemning anybody for their emotional difficulties or their self-deception for that matter, just because to me it's kind of part of everything. Okay, well, there's a little kind of review slash introduction, and then I want to share some kind of new thoughts for this episode. All right, so there's something about learning attitudes and behaviors from our parents or our caregivers that I don't feel like is paid enough attention to. If we do something, if we act similar to how our parents or caregivers act, it's often, I think, assumed that it's a genetic thing. Then it's acknowledged, I guess, usually that it could be nurture as well, nature or nurture. And the nurture part is, of course, how we're raised and everything. What I don't think people always understand is how we learn those behaviors, because I think it's maybe imagined that we deliberately teach our kids how to act. And I think we need to recognize, and maybe we largely do, but maybe we don't enough, that it's usually non-deliberate the way that we teach our kids how to act and think and feel. Different kids are sensitive to different things, I think, but lots of kids are sensitive to the pressure, the emotional pressure, if you will, that we kind of put on them. Not that we mean to, but just because the way that we think and feel and the way we cope with life. So I'm being kind of general here. Alice Miller talked about this quite a bit in the terms of children feeling like there are certain ways that are okay to feel and certain ways that are not. So that kind of self-condemnation for feeling bad gets passed on for feeling a way that you're not supposed to. And that's one issue. She talked a lot about how love was withheld by our parents or our mother if we expressed anger, for example, or rage, and that's not a good thing to do, because sometimes it's right to be angry and enraged. So with us going through life feeling like that's not okay, it causes tons of emotional problems. I feel like I've seen that with people close to me. And some in myself. So, I think that's something that needs to be paid attention to and acknowledged, and I'm glad that Alice Miller had the guts to talk about it, and it wouldn't hurt us to talk about that some more, I think, and understand about that, how we learn from our parents and caregivers and others, I guess, to a lesser degree, probably. Okay, that was that thought. I'm a little hesitant to share this next thing, but we're trying to understand depression and anxiety, and I feel like you have to be open to every explanation, if you will. So one aspect of this is spiritual, and we've talked about this. There's the brain phenomena, the chemicals, the electromagnetic activity, whatever it is, and everything that happens in the brain and whatever else happens physically, but there are also spiritual principles going on. And I want to, at least I kind of want to read you this thing that was said about a person with anxiety. So Lucy Mack Smith, mother of Joseph Smith, was talking to her niece. She went and visited her niece in Michigan. Her niece's name is Lovisa. And Lovisa suffered from anxiety, I would say. She had a nervous condition, I would say. What she says herself is, "Aunt, I'm so nervous, I'm scarcely ever able to see any company." And some of the account tells how she didn't want to see anybody. So her aunt, Lucy Mack Smith, says to her, "Now, Lovisa, do you know what ails you? I can tell you exactly what it is. Aren't we always asking what anxiety is? There is a good spirit and an evil one operating upon you, and the bad spirit has almost got possession of you. And when the good spirit is the least agitated, the evil one strives for the entire mastery and sets the good spirit to fluttering, just ready to be gone, because it has so slight a foothold. But you have been so for a long time, and you may yet live many years. And then she proceeds to encourage her to get a priesthood blessing. She says, even should you not be healed, do you not wish to know something about your Savior before you meet him? So, I don't know. I think that's relevant. I think it's interesting. If you're like me and take her account to be accurate and assume that the reason she put that account in there is because she felt it was important and felt it was inspired, she says the same thing to someone else shortly, I want to say a few days or something after that, that has a similar issue. So I don't think she would have put that in the account if she hadn't felt that was an inspired thing that happened. So what do we say about this? Should I read it again? Are you interested? Do you know what ails you? I can tell you exactly what it is. There is a good spirit and an evil one operating upon you, and the bad spirit has almost got possession of you. And when the good spirit is the least agitated, the evil one strives for the entire mastery and sets the good spirit to fluttering, just ready to be gone, because it has so slight a foothold. But you have been so for a long time, and you may yet live many years. Okay. So, what do we say about this? I'm not sure exactly what to make of this, but what I can see is that there are multiple spirits operating upon this person, and I assume all of us. Maybe it's just two, maybe it's more than two, I don't know. But there's good and there's evil. Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of that. But if that was an inspired thing she said, then there are spirits operating upon us, which we kind of know that already, don't we? We've talked about that before. I think I've said how I believe that that's kind of how it works. We don't just operate in a vacuum. We choose good and evil based on being influenced by both sides and their people. Okay. It hasn't been revealed how that works. One day we'll know, I think. But we don't necessarily right now. And maybe we don't need to know exactly. I'm not sure. I do think it's relevant. So, there's that. All right. Moving on. The Savior taught about spirits operating upon us a little bit. He said, when the unclean spirit has gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and findeth none. Then he saith, I will return into my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Why is it swept and garnished and empty? Because the person hasn't replaced it with a good spirit, I guess. You can't let the bad spirit back in once you kick it out. The Lord continues, then goeth he and taketh with himself seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there, and the last state of that man is worse than the first. Even so shall it be also unto this wicked generation. So that's what the Lord said. It's in Matthew. So how do these operations of spirits upon us have to do with mental health? Well, for one, a priesthood blessing can help us. That's relevant. But as a long-term solution, I'm not sure what that means. Okay. We talked in the beginning of this podcast about how we have progressed a little bit describing anxiety and depression. We haven't talked about it much. Really, you'll have to listen. But we talked a little bit about our background and what we're about and talking about self-deception. One of the things we came upon that I felt good about was an explanation for depression, which described it as basically a failure to forgive yourself. And I felt good about that. It makes sense to me. I guess maybe it's something that I feel like I can relate to, at least going for a prolonged period of time. You know, not forgiving that person can really eat at you and affect your life, affect your health, everything. And so when we happen upon the insight that depression is basically, it's like not forgiving another person, but it's that you're not forgiving yourself. That seems to explain a lot to me. We're trying to wrestle these to the ground, we're trying to wrestle anxiety and depression to the ground as far as our understanding of them goes. Not that it's going to solve everybody's depression and anxiety all of a sudden, but it's going to help us be able to direct our efforts in the right way. Help us. Okay, so, but what is anxiety? If that's depression, not forgiving yourself, what is anxiety? We know it's related, and we're still working on that. I don't have a full answer that I've been satisfied with. So we'll continue to work on that, and we'll get there. Only because, have you heard of this quote by Albert Einstein, great thinker of our time, great physicist? He said, "It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stick with problems longer." Okay, so we're going to stick with this problem. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to give up. We're not going to move on. We want to solve this riddle of the universe, this puzzle of our time and of the world. God knows how this works. He knows exactly what the principles are behind this. And he is more liberal than many people would imagine in giving understanding to the children of men. And I believe fully that this is something that can be understood. I'm not necessarily so smart. It's not that. But I do feel like if we stick to this and work at it, we can understand it. Okay. So regarding anxiety, though, can we still say it's an unfortunate thing that happens to some people and that our job is to do the best we can with it? And that we'll be judged on what we do with what we're given. Surely that's all true. Of course, that's not a full explanation, and we're not going to stop there. Not if we want to really understand it. We do want to understand it. Let's see, I'm reading through my notes here. Can't we understand the mechanics of it in a way that is helpful, super helpful, and maps out for a person what can and does happen and make them aware of it? Surely we can. Surely we can put that in a place that's trustworthy. There are many voices out there saying many things about mental health. I feel like we are coming together in certain ways. At least we know that it's not all brain chemicals, or else why would therapy work? We know that it's not all psychological, or else why would chemicals work? At least somewhat. With a true understanding of these things, you won't be overly condemned, and you won't be overly excused. You'll just be informed. No one will be telling you, you are doing this all yourself and you need to stop it. And no one will be telling you, you're a pure victim in this thing and there's nothing you can do. Because neither is true, is it? Yes, there may be too many voices saying the latter, that we're victims and there's nothing we can do. But that doesn't mean we have to swing the pendulum all the way the other way and declare that we're all responsible. Because that's probably not true either. The truth is somewhere in the middle, isn't it? And we can't judge exactly in every case how much a person is capable of stopping it. That doesn't mean we should give up and say, well, we can't judge, leave everybody alone and don't try to help. Because we don't know how to judge. It's true we don't know how to judge. Can we just love each other and not worry about the judgment so much? That can be hard to do. But we can do it if we concentrate on it, I think. But the part here that I felt good about was that it's not one or the other. We won't be overly condemning somebody. We won't be overly excusing anybody. We'll just be informing them. Nobody will be saying, you're just doing this all yourself and you need to stop it. Because there are voices out there saying that. But we shouldn't say that. And no one will be telling you, you're a pure victim in this thing and there's nothing you can do. There are voices out there saying that too. But surely neither is true in a general sense. Sure, you might find somebody who's just making an excuse and they do need to take more responsibility. But man, I would be so careful about that. And you might find somebody who, no matter what they do, they're still going to struggle with it because of what they're dealing with. And we don't know how much a person is dealing with. But I'm not saying a person can't have insight into that for another person. I think that's maybe important that you do have insight into that, especially if you're trying to help them. And I'm not saying there you couldn't have inspiration regarding that, but in a general way, can we just see that there are those two extremes and avoid them? You see those extremes, right? The condemning one and the excusing one. So I hope I haven't been one of the voices swinging the pendulum too far one way. I probably have, to be honest, because I'm not perfect either, and it's very easy to see, perceive all the voices going too far in one direction and want to counter that. But I'm telling you, we need to avoid that. Okay. That's about all I got. I wrote some more things, but I think I covered it mostly. Still not sure what to think about Joseph Smith's mother's account. I do think she wouldn't have put that in there if she didn't feel inspired about it, and didn't feel strongly after years of her life that that was something important and worthwhile. So I do think that. But what I don't know what to make of is, you know, the rest, how it works. What the principles are with spirits operating upon us, and what those laws and principles are, what their bounds are, and what those laws are. But that's okay. We're working towards it, and if we never get that, it might be okay. We might not need that, but I feel I want to explore all the things that, you know, are interesting and seem relevant and possibly helpful, and maybe down the line we'll find a place to put that puzzle piece. You know how it is putting a puzzle together. Sometimes you see a piece that you make note of it, but you still don't know where to put it, and you might work on something else for a while until you see where to put it. So I feel like that's a little like what we're doing with this. And I guess forgive me if we're not going in a direct line. But that's what you do when you have it all figured out, supposedly, and it's like a textbook. Did you know that textbooks teach backwards? They teach what we've learned, and then they teach you the history and what's behind that principle, instead of in chronological order, which is more like we discover one little thing and find an inconsistency and go towards the understanding that we have, but we didn't have that understanding the whole time. And I'm not saying all textbooks are exactly the same, but you know what I mean. If I were to tell you, well, there's this light that we all can either conform to or violate, and it's called the light of Christ, or maybe there are other sources of that light. I don't know yet. But, oh boy, I'm getting into an explanation I'm not prepared for, and maybe I'm going to wait on that. Yeah, let's do that. It's been real. Appreciate you joining me on this journey. It's fun, isn't it? And I think we're going to get there one little piece of truth and one bit of inspiration at a time, perhaps. But we'll get there. All right, have a great day, and let's end on this father song. I'll just try to sing you the whole thing, okay? She was the mother, and I was the father. She had her job to do, and I had mine. They always say equal partners, but to me I don't feel equal. Gotta provide for and protect and try to lead them right. So I went to my daddy and I asked for some direction. He said, son, I don't have a clue and you're my living proof. And I laughed, but he stayed silent and his face lost all expression. He said, son, there's a lot to know and there's a lot to do. Cause you got to know when to hold them, know when to scold them, know when to work away, when to have fun. You always make conversation. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for nothing when the evening's done. Now every father knows, less than half of what he's doing, just do what his father done, avoiding his mistakes. And sometimes that leaves about nothing but the man and what he's made of. And if you wanna know the truth, son, well, we ain't got what it takes. So you go to your maker and you ask for some direction. Say, Lord, I know I'm a fool and never can succeed. He'll say, Clayton, you're my son and your children are my children. So if you ask lots and listen well, I'll give you what you need. Cause you got to know when to hold them, know when to scold them, know when to work away, when to have fun. You always make conversation. When sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for nothing when the evening's done. You got to know when to hold them, know when to scold them, know when to work away, when to have fun. You always make conversation. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for nothing when the evening's done. All right, bye.